Hello and welcome to Taking Hugh for Granted, the podcast in which two Hugh Grant enthusiasts watched all of his seminal works, including every single movie, his greatest TV shows, and even the student film he made at university. In this series, these Hugh Grant experts will look back at his career to create the definitive list of the greatest Hugh Grant productions ever made. I'm Drew Great, and I'm joined, as always, by my colleague and fellow Hugh Grant obsessive, Oscar Beardmore Great. Oscar, how the bloody hell are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing very well, as always, Diggs. How are you, mate?
I am doing great. I'm doing great because, my word, are we having some fun. At the moment with this podcast, I'm just having the best time in the world. And it's a nightmare. We're well over halfway done.
I know.
We've done, what is it? So we've done 30 films, TV shows, TV movies, and of course the student film. So listen back to those episodes. But yeah, we're well over halfway. I mean, what have the listeners got in store for them today?
We've got 10 more films today, most of which are modern takes, I would say. So they're post 1995. So in previous episodes, we've had some of the really old ones, including, as we mentioned, a student film. But we've got a lot that are kind of in the 1996, 99 region. And then we got a few more modern day ones as well. So I think there's something for everyone here. And there's definitely going to be a couple of surprises.
Yes, exactly. And the way that we've ranked these has meant that today there's going to be two or three films only that are set in stone. The rest of them we're going to debate about how high they should be on our list because of how we rank them. So if you haven't listened to the previous episode, we rank them on four categories, all out of five, with an overall score of 20. So how much is Hugh in the film out of five? How good is Hugh in the film? How sexy is Hugh in the film? And is the film any good? All of those out of five together gives you a score of 20. We put those scores together. So 20 from me, 20 from Oscar, and that's where the films fall in the ranking. But there's obviously some which are tied, and today that's the case with a lot of films. So I hope you've got your debating hat on. There's we've got actually to start quite a fiery one to start. So should we get involved?
Let's get straight to it, Diggs.
Beginning today's rankings and squaring off for 20th and 19th place in Hugh Grant's greatest ever films list is Music and Lyrics and Love Actually.
All right, Tix. I mean, it's quite early in the morning for me here, but I'm wide awake now because battling out for place number 19 and 20, we have two heavyweights of Hugh Grant's filmography. Here's drumroll, please. Love Actually.
Oh.
And Music and Lyrics. Diggs, why don't you just start off by maybe telling audiences why Love Actually has fallen? Because if the tabloids are making a story about our podcast, that would be well up there.
Oh, good God. I mean, where to start? We've done two or three episodes on Love Actually. We've watched it a number of times. We've interviewed people about the film. It's probably our most analysed Hugh Grant film, which is really saying a lot. And it really is telling that it's slipped this far down. I mean, let's be kind to it for a moment. As I mentioned in the intro, maybe it's because of our ranking system. Hugh Grant obviously isn't in the film a lot. There's like eight or nine storylines in it. Hugh is just part of one of them in this sort of anthology of love stories. But to be honest, the part of the problem is the film is deeply, deeply cynical, and Love Actually is really quite the name. It is Love Actually. In some ways you might think that's nice, but for a film that's meant to be cuddly and Christmassy, it comes across cynical and mean and horrible. Alan Rickman's storyline with Emma Thompson, Hugh Grant and Martin McCutcheon is all right. There's just a lot of storyline. Colin Firth, who we hate on this podcast, his storyline is dreadful. So that's why it slips so far down. I mean, can you talk to maybe about some more of the saving graces of the film? Because people love this. I think people are going to be really annoyed with two Hugh Grant obsessives who don't like this film.
Yeah, Diggs is a hard one. And like you say, we've dedicated like three episodes, probably like 4.5 hours on air about talking about Love Actually. So if you haven't listened to those, we've got an excellent Christmas special that came out a couple of years ago where we interviewed a writer from The Atlantic and some people who hosted Love Actually podcast. So take it from us. We know what we're talking about here.
Yeah, come on. we're the experts here.
I know people are going to be upset by this. I think we fall both on the same side, Diggs, that it's too long.
You've
watched it too many times. you're right. It's just very cynical. I mean, for me, the storyline that I relate most to, or maybe not even I don't relate to it, but the one that I like the best is Liam Neeson's storyline with his little kid. Like, that's the one where I do feel all cuddly and I feel sad for the kid and I feel sad for Liam. And, you know, I obviously love the scene of Hugh Grant dancing and some of the sort of awkward moments he has with Natalie. But, you know, when you look at on the face of it, it's also quite a creepy story. Like, the power dynamics in that are shocking. Like, it's Boris Johnson behavior, let's be honest. Like, you know, you wouldn't get away with that. And I know it's meant to be Christmassy, but for me, I would put music and lyrics ahead of it. But that's just me. And I love music and lyrics. And before coming on air this morning, I will admit I was listening to the soundtrack. So,
well. Well, let's talk about music and lyrics then, because I could have guessed this would happen. Music and lyrics, for those of you that don't know, Hugh Grant plays a singer songwriter from the 80s who has a smash hit, Pop Goes My Heart, which I've got to say, and I said it when we did our episode, the film opens with the music video of Pop Goes My Heart, this pop tune that he makes in the 80s. Oh my god. That is an opening that is up there with Inglourious Basterds to a film. It's up there with Dusk Till Dawn. It's up there with The Goodfellas. Like, that is one of the greatest openings. It's up there with bloody Saving Private Ryan. It is an incredible opening to the film, and it's just so funny. And, you know, Oscar, I know you're a musical man. We've heard some of your great songs and stuff, not just on Music and Lyrics episode, but just throughout the series that we've done. And Hugh Grant gets the pipes out in this one. He does a lot of singing. He's this, you know, washed-up singer-songwriter. He doesn't think he can make songs anymore. He meets wonderful Drew Barrymore, who comes in to water his plants. And then turns out, wow, she's an amazing lyricist. And she inspires him again. And then they have a wonderful love story. For me, I'm a lot meaner on this film just because I'm a boring bastard. But please, we've already upset people enough with the Love Actually thing. So tell them why this is such a good film.
I think this is such a good film because it marks the moment where Hugh throws all respect he has for himself out the window. Okay? And I think this is the moment where we see him decide, I don't really give a shit about my reputation. Like, I've made lots of money. I've been typecasted. People think I'm a narcissist. And I'm just going to either play right into that or just be like, I'm going to prove to other people that, you know, there's an extra dimension to me here. And so he starts having a lot of fun with his career. You know, he could have been absolutely roasted for this film. Like, you know, he sings, could have been a disaster. He dances, could have been a disaster. I mean, you know, I'll be the first to admit the screenplay is not something to write home about particularly, but it is, you know, compared to some of his other rom-coms, I think it's got a bit more to it. It's a bit more edges, you would say. And it does leave me feeling warm and fuzzy. And like, when I was listening to the music this morning, it brought me back to that time when we recorded the episode. And I was like, those are great times. Those were great times.
You know what? So in my ranking, I think I put Love Actually above Music and Lyrics just because I'm like, I just want to pander to the people. But you know what, Oscar? You're absolutely right. Love Actually, I want to put a 20, and Music and Lyrics, for the music and lyrics alone, I think we should put a number 19.
Yes, Diggs, I'm glad I convinced you.
Facing off for 18th, 17th and 16th place will be The Undoing, Sirens and The Remains of the Day.
Oscar, keep that debating hat on. That's one debate that you can say that you've won, but here we go. We've got, this one is a three-way tie. So here we go, 16th, 17th, and 18th place, we have a TV show, The Undoing, released in 2020 on HBO. We have Sirens from 1994, which I'm not sure many people here would have heard about, and something called Remains of the Day, 1993. Oscar, your thoughts on any and all of those, please.
Ooh. There's three toughies there, Diggs. I think people at home will know The Undoing because it's the most recent of these three. I think some people will also know The Remains of the Day. It was a very famous book and then adapted to a screenplay. People might not have heard of Sirens and be surprised to see it so far up this list.
Yeah.
And let me just start there. It is wacky. If you you listen to our previous episode, our previous ranking here, you would have heard us talking about Bitter Moon and some of the, you know, promiscuous, let's say, stuff that goes on in that film. And this is quite similar. Hugh plays this kind of like buttoned up guy. He's a priest and he goes to the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, Australia. I guess on some kind of, he's sort of on a retreat to go and look into supposed blasphemy with this local artist. And when he gets there, he finds things are pretty out of order. Like there's a, you know, basically this guy is like painting naked women, and women are just walking around the complex naked. And he is, you know, as Hugh Grant, just absolutely appalled by this behavior. But and in classic fashion, it all sort of turns into debauchery, and his wife starts basically, you know, having affairs, and by the end of the film, everyone's naked. So
it's literally kind of,
but you know, it's got a great cast. It's got Sam Neill in it. It's got Tara Fitzgerald, who we know we love from an Englishman who came up a hill but went down a mountain. So I you know, just to start with that one, I don't know whether I'm going to put that at the top of those three, but Sirens is a really interesting film.
It's one of those gems that, you know, when you're mining away at the Hugh Grant Mountain, you discover, you know, there's some coal that you'll find, or I don't know what people find when they're mining, just more rock. But eventually you'll find, I don't know how it works. I never worked a day in my life. Look at these arms. Yeah, no one can see
you
at home.
You would be the first person to die in a coal mine.
Exactly. And I'd never get to these beautiful gems like films like Sirens. Like, doing this has been an absolute honor, to find films like this, like crazy out there. Like Oscar said, crazy lesbian scenes, Hugh Grant's worst sex scene in this film, which, you know, because if you like Hugh bumbling and sort of buttoned up, this is him like buttoned up to his most. Like, he plays a proper like straight guy, and I don't mean like, oh, he's super hetero, I mean like he is straight laced as it comes. And it creates this wonderful dynamic, and it has this really un-Hollywood ending, which really makes you think about his relationship dynamics with Tara Fitzgerald, who again is a leading lady that we love, who doesn't get enough press, I guess, around the whole Hugh Grant thing. It's a really, really great film, and one that people won't have heard of. So do go and check that out. And I agree with you, though, that maybe I would put that, I'd maybe put that in the middle. And beneath it, at number 18, I think I'd put The Undoing, the HBO show The Undoing, because for people that have seen it, it's about Nicole Kidman is this sort of hotshot person in New York. There's someone gets killed, and it looks like Hugh Grant's done it. Oscar, I think you coined it in our episode as a Hugh done it, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And I think that, you know, spoiler alert, okay, if you've gone, Hugh does do it. Hugh did do it. Hugh done it.
He done it.
He done it. And the problem is it's a really interesting TV show, in that it's from Nicole Kidman, you know, he's her husband. And she's basically searching in her psyche for anyone else that could have done this. But everything is pointing towards it being Hugh. As an audience, we're also being like, well, who else did it? Because obviously it's going to be Hugh, so it's going to be someone else. And then at the end, when it's revealed it's Hugh, it's this odd thing where it feels quite realistic, but weirdly, as an audience, you feel like something's been taken away. Like, it doesn't hit that hard. And so I do think, I will say, Hugh Grant's acting in it is amazing. There's acting we haven't seen him do before. He's shouting, he's crying, he's laughing, he's singing. He's unhinged. He's murdering. He's murdering. It's unhinged. But I think when it finishes, you're just missing something.
Diggs, I think that is that's the most perfect description I've heard of The Undoing, because I feel like The Undoing is one of these ones where, because it came out recently and it came out after we started making this podcast, people were asking my opinion of it. And I couldn't really put it into words like that. And I think that's an excellent description, where it had this huge build up, like 5-6 episodes. And at the end, when we found out it was Hugh, we were like, oh, well, that's what we all thought from like the first minute of the entire TV show. So I agree with you. I would also put The Undoing below Sirens, and I would put The Remains of the Day at the top of these three. I'll start off here on The Remains of the Day. I this is like a fine wine that keeps on getting better with age. Like the more,
yes,
the more I think about it, I actually went back a few months ago and read the book. And I recommend you all to do that because it is a really, really excellent book. And it asks so many like moral questions. It might be wrapped up in this story around a butler in an English household in the sort of like during the First, Second World War. But it actually is very relevant to our lives at the moment. It talks about lots of themes about loyalty, the workplace, sexuality. There's whole loads of things to unpack in this movie. And Hugh, it complements the cast of Abdi Hopkins and Emma Thompson perfectly. And like I think that there's just like, it's one of those films where like you just need to watch it and just think, let it marinate in your brain.
Yes.
And you'll come away thinking this is a great movie.
Yeah, Oscar, I can't. That's absolutely perfect. I mean, again, like you said, this film marinates. That's the perfect word. We watched this and it just sort of, you know, I watched it and I was like, okay, because it's quite claustrophobic. You know, Anthony Hopkins is this really devout butler, you know, even though his great leaders might be bloody Nazi sympathizers, and he still, you know, serves to the end and serves to a bitter point, you know, can't ever let his emotions show. It's so. I just feel my chest feels tight thinking about it. But you watch this film and it's hypnotic. And like you say, afterwards, you come away and you think about it more and it marinates and you think, fucking hell, that was brilliant. That was really good. And, you know, but so it's a great film. I suppose, though, the reason why then it's so low down on our list, I say so low down, it's done pretty bloody well, but Hugh isn't in it that much.
No.
And we definitely disagreed on how good Hugh looked in it, because Hugh has this very, he's this journalist. Well, he's someone's godson, and he's this journalist, and he has this like slick back hair. Now, Oscar thought he looked like James Bond. I thought he looked like shit. But he does. But and he plays this complete buffoon. It's quite funny because I think Anthony Hopkins' dad, who also works there, dies, and Hugh, to like try and console him, just strikes up a conversation about trout. I mean, that's the kind of character he plays. But also later on in the film, tries to uncover this whole, you know, Nazi sympathizing thing, and he is, you know, at his role, he does a very good job. You know, he's not in it much, but he does compliment the film massively. If he was in the film more, this film would be top 10, no questions asked. Like Oscar says, I'm sure read the book, but also do watch the film. It really makes you think, and it's bloody brilliant.
At 15th, it's Florence Foster Jenkins.
Whew, Oscar, my word. Thank God now we can chill out a bit, because we've got one that isn't contested. So take that debating hat off for a second. Let your hair down. We have Florence Foster Jenkins from 2016 at number 15. Oscar, your thoughts, please.
I'm really enjoying this episode because I don't have to pretend I don't have to pretend that I like the film.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
I actually genuinely like all these films, and we'll be very happy to watch them with any Hugh Grant fan out there.
Yeah.
Look, Florence Foster Jenkins also holds a very special place in my heart. I feel like Music and Lyrics and Florence Foster Jenkins are two films I just really love. This one is so like... It makes me feel like warm inside. And I have to say, hats off to Meryl Streep in this movie.
Wow.
Meryl Streep is fantastic, I think, in this film. So to quickly summarize, Florence Foster Jenkins was this kind of socialite living in New York back in the day in the Second World War. And she is just an awful opera singer. She's like the world's worst opera singer, but she thinks she's brilliant. And Hugh plays her husband and sort of helps convince her of this lie. And somehow, because she's such a socialite, she's able to get a concert at Carnegie Hall in the center of New York. And it's going to be a disaster. But basically, like, Hugh's steadfast belief, and I guess also, like, he covers up the fact that, like, the newspapers are writing bad stuff about her, allows her to, you know, perform here, and she gets like a standing ovation in the end. It's just a real feel-good film. But Hugh's character in this movie is really interesting because you don't really know mm. what's going on behind the eyes. Like, he is on the one, it's a bit mm. like, it's another film about, I guess, loyalty a little bit. Like, he is exceptionally loyal to his wife, but on the other hand, he's doing a few sneaky things in the background. Like, he might be having an affair. He's kind of like, I don't know, he's a little bit dodgy behind the scenes, but what he can't be accused of is having any disloyalty towards his wife. He lifts her up the whole time. And I just think it's like a really beautiful kind of biopic, and I love it.
Oscar, I completely agree. I really, really love this film. And again, it is one of those ones that you could stick on for your grandma, and it's just on the edge. We said this in our episode as well. It's just got enough edge, but not too much that it's too crazy. And so it is lovely and feel good. But, and like you say, Hugh Grant, we have to mention him. He looks great in the film. He does a brilliant dance again in this film. There's some great dancing. And again, he talks about, Oscar's doing it. For those of you on YouTube, you can check that one out. But honestly, it's really funny again, just with that thing as well. Hugh Grant, I remember you found that clip online of him saying in an interview, he was like, you know, a moment for a writer saying, then Hugh Grant dances brilliantly. He said was, you know, 3 or 4 months in a dance studio for him, which is so funny. but this film and Hugh Grant's role and his fantastic acting cannot be understated here. This is this woman, because she's got loads of money and she's this socialite, loads of people pander to her. So even her like her singing coach pretends that she's amazing, and you know, and everyone just feeds into it. Hugh Grant does the same. And so for a lot of this film, you look at him and you go, are you really her husband? Do you really love her? Or are you just here for the money like everyone else? But more and more throughout the film, you're unsure. You're like, actually, I think he does love her. Despite the affair and all this sort of stuff, it makes you question, what is love really? Does it have to be just this thing? Like, do they have to, like, you know, sleep in the same bed every night and be completely devoted to each other and tell each other everything? It's really interesting. And yet so, it's quite simple and yet brilliant. I really love this film. God, it's good to talk about good films.
Yes. I mean, look, ladies and gents, this is a much better reflection of what love actually is than Love Actually.
Tika, baby, son.
Oh, Tika, Bob.
I'm sorry, I'm applauding. That's genius.
That's a little in-joke. I'm sorry, fans, for the in-joke. If you know an iconic piece of commentary from a goal scored by Robert Pires in 1997, then you might get that.
Yeah. Do I want to be quoting Andy Gray on this podcast? This quite probably, nice probably progressive not. Podcast. Oh, well, it's too late now.
Going for 14th, 13th and 12th places will be Extreme Measures, Mickey Blue Eyes and Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Another exciting one to battle out here. So we have Extreme Measures, 1996, Mickey Blue Eyes, 1999, and Hugh's most recent production, Dungeons & Dragons, 2023.
Wow. I'm so intrigued to hear your thoughts on some of these, Oscar, because I think also people listening at home, they might not have heard of Mickey Blue Eyes, and they certainly, I don't think, will have heard of Extreme Measures. So let's talk about those in a second. But to sort of spare myself having to tell you where I'm going to put these three films, I will talk about the most recent film first, just because it's fresh in everyone's memories, Dungeons & Dragons. Now, I'm a Dungeons & Dragons fan. I love the game. So I was very excited for this movie. This film, I think, genuinely is really, really great. It's really, really funny. What the problem with these fantasy films can do sometimes is they can take themselves too seriously, or they can take themselves, and sometimes even not seriously enough. I remember Iron Man 3, I was fuming with, because that film was just stupid. It was just really funny. And don't get me wrong, I loved it. I laughed loads. And then I came out, I was like, that was, you know, I need to care a little bit. You can't just, the whole thing just can't be a joke. There's meant to be the world that's at stake here. So I think that's why this film did well. I think some of the jokes in there, like, for example, the and this is a D&D reference, actually. I think that people could easily think, oh, no, what if I haven't played D&D before? We'll understand it. You will. And this is the sort of isn't this reference fest? That there's a spell in the game called Speak with the Dead. And the scene on that where they raise someone from the dead and speak to them using this spell that's in the game, you know, whether you play D&D or not, is so funny. And I think, Oscar, you said it right in our episode when you said it's like Monty Python. This film is really funny. Hugh Grant has a look we've never seen before. He is, I would say, Phoenix Buchanan-esque in from Paddington 2. You know, he's a fun villain, but he can be really quite evil as well. It's just a fun bloody romp. And yeah, I mean, I'd be interested. I'm sure you think the same. We're getting to that point now in the list where these are good films.
Yeah. I'm judging by that, Diggs, that you might be putting that at number 12.
I'll be honest. I think I might put it at number 14.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Like you say, we're just dealing with good films now, so it's hard to tell what you're going to put where.
Yeah.
Why don't I talk about Mickey Blue Eyes for a sec?
Yes.
I keep on saying, I have a soft spot for this film. I have a soft spot. Guess what? I have another soft spot for this film. I think this is just like a great era of Hugh Grant's filmography. He's just like churning out average rom-coms one after another. This one is an interesting one because this was a sort of co-production, I guess, with Liz Hurley and Hugh Grant's and Liz Hurley's film production company called Simian Films. And this one is just, I think this film has got the best piece of comedy, whether it was intentional or not, from Hugh Grant's entire filmography. It's a scene with the hotshot mafia boss who sadly passed away quite recently.
Yeah.
Where
played by James Caan.
Yes, who was in The Godfather. So it's kind of got like that little bit of like irony to it because he was like this Englishman in New York who couldn't be further away from the mafia. And he's trying to like prove to the mafia boss really that he can sort of dance in his circles. He's dating his daughter, so he's sort of like trying to impress. And they're in this car and he's trying to basically teach him some kind of mafia-like or Italian-American-like phrases to fit in. So he's going, forget about it. And he's going, forget about it. When it's just, I think it's genius. I think it's so funny. And there's just a lot, like this, Mickey Blue Eyes is quite kind of like slapstick comedy, isn't it? Like, you know, this whole joke about Hugh being, he's like Mickey Blue Eyes because he's like some cousin from Kansas who's like, not, you know, the Kansas Mickey Blue Eyes. It's just, I think it's genius. So I personally might put Mickey Blue Eyes above Extreme Measures and Dungeons and Dragons. Maybe before I do that, you should have a quick note on Extreme Measures, because like you say, some people, I think most people who aren't hardcore fans will not have heard of this movie from 1996.
Well, like you say, also interestingly, that the two films that Simian Films made, Elizabeth Hurley and Hugh Grant's company made together, are interestingly in our list next to each other and quite high up on the overall list. And it's really, that is interesting.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
I don't know. I don't think so either. I mean, I think they've churned out, to be honest, two pretty decent films. They're all right. They are all right. And particularly for me, Extreme Measures. Extreme Measures is a thriller, maybe a psychological thriller. Hugh Grant plays a doctor who, I think some of the patients at his hospital maybe are going missing. And this evil mastermind, he's good. Well, I say evil. This is the beautiful thing about the film. This big doctor is going to try and cure paralysis. And so people in wheelchairs from this hostel are going missing. And Hugh Grant basically, you know, finds out it's a big conspiracy and finds his way to this like evil lair where the guy's doing experiments on all these people and being like, listen, I'm an amazing doctor. I might be able to cure this before I die. I just need to break a few eggs to make my cake. You know, that's what happens. And it's this really interesting thinking man's thriller where Hugh Grant does a really good performance, by the way. He looks really good. He plays the jokes at the right time, but he plays it seriously at the other times. And you are left watching this film going, shit, okay. Well, you know, it's a villain where you sort of, you understand what, you understand, you get why they're doing what they're doing. They're not just some, you know, CGI villain in a Marvel film or whatever. They believe they are doing the right thing. And other people might even agree with them. But you have to just look out for what's right. There's loads of these ethical conundrums throughout the film, and I think it really makes you think when you come away. But, you know, no one's heard of it. It didn't do that well. And I think, genuinely, that's a shame, because I think it is quite a good film.
Yeah, and it broke the mold a little bit of the rom-com, and showed earlier on in his career that there was the Hugh Nascence to come because it is unique. It's like this, like you say, kind of like a crime thriller, and I think it gets missed. He's actually starring with Sarah Jessica Parker, who would have at the time been massive because of Sex and the City and stuff like that at the time. But yeah, it's like you say, it makes you think there's a moral conundrum in there. Like they're taking homeless people from New York and kind of operating on them, which is messed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Like it's a very solid watch. I don't think it did particularly well at the box office, but I think it's one of those films, again, that maybe it's got a little bit better of time when people realize, you know what, this was actually a pretty decent film. Like it kept me like entertained throughout. And I think we both had that reflection in our episode where we were like, you know what, that was solid.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So Diggs, now we got to decide on this one. So this is my order. Okay. My order is 12th, Mickey Blue Eyes, 13th, Dungeons and Dragons, 14th, Extreme Measures.
I have to say, I mean, maybe it's... I'm sorry for the people at home who are like, okay.
I think you should stick to your guns, Dick. Stick to your guns.
Oh, no, no. I was going to say, it's going to be boring for the people at home, but I think I'm exactly the same. Extreme Measures is a really good thriller, but Dungeons & Dragons is a brilliant fantasy film, and I think that's even harder to do. But Mickey Blue Eyes has something neither of them have, which is, and this cannot go understated, I have my issues with Mickey Blue Eyes. You know, it's a rom-com. There's some things wrong with it. In fact, I think part of my issue with it is that it doesn't do the romance enough. It's too much com. But within that com is Hugh Grant's, and we're not understating this when Oscar said this, perhaps his funniest moment ever on screen, perhaps his funniest scene. That cannot go understated. And for that reason alone, I think it has to go 12.
Yes, I'm glad Mickey Blue Eyes is coming at 12. I'm actually buzzy about that.
11th place in Hugh Grant's best films to date is Bridget Jones' Edge of Reason.
And Oscar, at number 11, the last film on our list today at least, is Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason. Talk to me.
Wow, Diggs. Yeah, it's crazy that we got to number 11. Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason. I mean, when I first approached the Bridget Jones films... Before doing this podcast, I had a rather preconceived idea of what Bridget Jones was, mainly from my parents, because they loved the films, and I was like, for that reason, I'm out. I don't want any part of this bullshit. But I have come round. I have come round to the brilliant writing and the hilarious character that Bridget is. She is brilliant. Renée Zellweger is brilliant, and amazing. Hugh and Colin Firth are like the perfect like guys fighting it out, aren't they? I think it's perfect casting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bridget Jones's Diary, I think, is always going to be better than Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason, so the second film. But it's a quite close second, I would say. Like, you know, there are. I was looking this up last night, like which films... sequel is better than the original, and I was happy to see actually Paddington 2 was in the list, but I was
yes.
Yeah, I know, it's great. I would say this is a bit like, if you were comparing it to a different franchise, I might compare it to Shrek. Like Shrek 1 is never going to be beaten, but Shrek 2 is brilliant in its own rights. And I think,
wow, to be honest, I'd say Shrek 2 is better than Shrek 1, but there you go.
Okay, well, fair enough. But the point still stands. It is a very, very good follow-up to the first film. I would love to get your thoughts too.
Well, I mean, I think what I've written in my notes here is... I've written a few things, but just on the film as a whole, this film did, to be fair, take everything that was good about Bridget Jones's Diary and just turn it up to 10. They put it on steroids. Hugh Grant and Colin Firth have yet another scrap. I mean, Bridget Jones... I mean, she comes in, but also just in general, it's just bigger. She comes in on a bloody, like, in a parachute, a Union Jack parachute. She ends up going to Thailand. She gets put in prison, for God's sake. Like, everything about the film, I mean, the Thai prison bit is a bit weird, but there's some great moments as well with Hugh Grant in Thailand and his whole shtick and him trying to get them to have a threesome with some sex worker there. It's crazy. The film is crazy. And, you know, does... what in some ways the beauty of the first film, which I'm sure, you know, those who've been listening up to this point, you know that it must be coming up at some point. The beauty of it is that it's something that maybe we can relate to a bit more, and it's a bit more homely and small in its story, but still, you know, big characters and lots of fun. This is a lot bigger in its story, but it still captures a lot of the greatness, and particularly Hugh Grant is fantastic. He's just as sexy. He's just as devilish. I think he looks incredible. I think he acts incredible. It is a brilliant film, and at least for this 10, deserves to top it. It's great.
Hugh Grant is a sly fox, isn't he? He is one sly fox, and it is it's brilliant. And I don't want to miss it, but Colin Firth is great too.
Yeah, listen, we can slip for a bit. Colin Firth is very good in this. He's very, very good. Yeah. And he makes me fall in love with him a little bit. The way he talks to Bridget in some of the bits in this film, I am just like, God, he's like the perfect man.
But we all have that Hugh Grant character in our life.
In our life.
The one we know we shouldn't be with.
yeah, exactly. Who, if you back into a dark room, goes, ever fancied doing it in the dark with a total stranger? All right, not a total stranger.
I love how you got that line absolutely memorized to heart. That's a brilliant line.
It's so good. He's so devilish. He's so evil. He plays the villain so well. And this sort of marries the villain that he loves playing these days with the rom-com actor so well. I think it's one of his most perfect roles. It's amazing.
If he was writing a CV or resume or cover letter, like that would be his opening line. I like dissect these two genres perfectly, the rom-com and the evil character, like perfectly the villain. Yeah,
exactly. So
no one's done it better since.
No, and they couldn't. Of course they couldn't. Oscar, before we end today, which has been another absolute cracking episode, and like you say, it's been so fun to talk about films. We've bashed a lot of films up to this point, so it's quite fun to talk about films we actually like.
Yeah.
Talk to me. I love this. If I was to give you the DVD of one of these right now that you had to watch right now, which would it be? It's a hard choice.
Yeah, this really is difficult. I know it's cliche and we said it every single episode. I am going to stick in Music and Lyrics.
Yes, dude. I love that. Come on.
How about you,
mate? That's so good. Well, I mean, today, I, you know, there's part of me that's like, oh, do I want to have a little think? Do I want to watch The Remains of the Day? Do I want to, like, rediscover that lovely gem in Sirens and, you know, maybe have some quiet time to myself? I was very close to saying something else then.
Yes.
But, you know, it's very obvious to say the top one on the list, but it's got to be Bridget Jones for me. His performance is so brilliant. He looks so brilliant, and it is just a pretty good film. So that one's got to go in.
Yeah. Well, it remains to be seen, fans out there, where the real original Bridget Jones will finish in our ranking, because as you know now, there are only 10 films left, and some of you at home might have been able to decipher out of the ranking what is in the top 10, but we will not reveal anything yet. And of course, you know, at this point, the order matters more than anything, really. Like, you know, let's be honest, Four Weddings and a Funeral is always going to be in the top 10, but where will it come in the ranking?
Yeah, where will it fall? I mean, we'll talk about this next episode, won't we? But I think there's going to be some surprises in there. Things you've never heard of, things you've heard a lot about. It's going to be an absolute buzz. But like you say, it's all shrouded in secrecy. You need to make sure you're following us wherever you're getting this podcast right now, so you're kept abreast and you're ready for the final episode. Hugh Grant's top 10 ever films. Wow. Wow. This is our magnum opus, Oscar.
It is our magnum opus.
We've reached the end, the pinnacle. This is so incredible. Wonderful. Guys, make sure you're along for the ride. At Taking Hugh on Twitter, at Taking Hugh for Granted on Instagram, Facebook, and I believe TikTok now as well. We might be at Taking Hugh on TikTok. Anyway, if you're on TikTok, follow us on there. We're having a great time on there as well. So everyone, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you're following, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
See you, everyone.